So we're just a few days before Chag HaPesach, Habalim Natova, and I wanted to begin our discussion this evening with a Dvar Halacha. Probably the best way to describe the opening discussion is that it is Halacha velo Lamaisa. It's also Lamaisa, but not the Halacha. And if that sounds somewhat obscure, hopefully we will explain. One of the central features of Seder night, of course, is the Arba Kosos, the four cups of wine. And there is much to say about them. We have discussed them in many different contexts, from many different angles in the past. But this evening, I would like to devote our remarks to the fifth cup, the Kos HaChamishis. And Mirtz Hashem, as we will see, how things came from the Makoros, from the sources, to the Seder table. Quite a bit happened in between. So we begin, for us, at the beginning, which is a Mishnah in Perek Arvei Psachim, the 10th Perek of Psachim, which deals with Hilchas Leila Seder. And in Daf Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, it discusses the fourth cup. And there it says, Revi'i, the fourth cup. What do we do? Gomer olav es ha-halel. We finish halel. That's an expression normally used, but here literally we are finishing the halel. We began at the end of Magid. We finish halel with the fourth cup. And ve'omer olav birkas hashir. We also say something which is called birkas hashir on this fourth cup. What is Birkas Hashir? Well, there are two opinions in the Gemara there. Some say that it's a reference to the bracha of Yehallelucha. That's Birkas Hashir, Yehallelucha that we normally say at the end of Hallel. Although here, as much as we're saying Hallel, it is nonetheless a chiddush that we have the concluding bracha of Yehallelucha, because on this night, as we know, we don't have the opening bracha, Hashir Kedishanim Mitzotze B'tzivonu, Likro es ha-halel. So this is the only night that we say halel with a bracha afterwards, but not before. That's one interpretation of, or explanation of, Birkas Hashir. The other interpretation is Nishmas Kol Chai. That's called Birkas Hashir, according to that opinion. And as we know, we say both Nishmas Kol Chai and the bracha of Yehallelucha. So far, so good. Now, the Gemara on Daf Kuf Yud Ches, Amud Aleph, then quotes a brief teaching from Rabbi Tarfon. Tana Rabbanon, the rabbis learned. Revi'i, the fourth bracha, Gomer Olav Es HaHalel. We say Halel. Ve'omer Halel HaGodol. And we also say Halel HaGodol, Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. Those are the words of Rabbi Tarfon. What is Halel HaGodol? Halel HaGodol is the way that Chazal refer to Mizmor Kuf Lamed Vav, 136 in Tehillim, what we call the Ki Le'olam Chastos, those 26 psukim that all end Ki Le'olam Chasto, that's Halel HaGodol. And therefore, what Rabbi Tarfon is doing is that he is adding to our list of things that we say over the Kos Revi'i. Not only do we say Halel, not only do we say Birkas Hashir, with its two interpretations, Yehallelucha and Nishmas, we also say Halel HaGodol, the 26 Ki Le'olam Chastos. Thus far is the Gemara, as is the reading of Rashi and the Rashbam. If we learn the Gemara simply, we have piled a number of items onto the fourth cup. However, if you look in the Rif, the end of the Masechta, the Rif's reading is Tan Rabbanon Kos Chamishi Omer Olav Halal HaGodol Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. According to the reading of the Rif, Halal HaGodol, the Kilo Olam Chastos, are to be said, or said, on a fifth cup of wine. And that is actually the girsa of numerous other Rishonim and also numerous Gaonim. So we have before us now two readings. Halel HaGodol is another thing said on the fourth cup, or is it perhaps said on the fifth cup? Now, one of the Rishonim who took exception to this ruling that we would say Halal Haggadah on a fifth cup is the Baal Hamor, Rabbeinu Zerachya Halevi, in his critical comments on the Rif. And the Baal Hamor opens by saying, well, where does the idea of a fifth cup come from? I mean, we're used to four cups, and all of a sudden there's this fifth cup. Moreover, says Baal Hamor, even if it's true that Rabbi Tarfon is of the opinion that something, halal hagadol, should be said on a fifth cup, well, the halacha wouldn't follow Rabbi Tarfon's opinion, because that would put him directly in conflict with the Mishnah. Because the very first Mishnah in Arvei Psachim tells us that there are four cups, lo yifchasu lo mi arba kosos, which means, at the very least, or more correctly, at the very most, this may be the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, but he surely would be sidelined by the normative opinion of the Chachamim that there are four cups and no more. Well, who will respond to these critiques of the Baal Hamor? None other than the Raivad, who also has a commentary on the Rif, and he's watching everyone. He's watching the Rif, he's watching anyone who's watching the Rif, and if they attack, he will respond. And the Raivad defends the idea of the fifth cup. Firstly, says Raivad, in response to Baal Hamor's question, and what room is there for a fifth cup? Says the Raivad, there is ample room for a fifth cup. Because if you know the background to the four, you'll understand why there's room for a fifth. The classic reason given by Chazal for the four cups on Seder night is that they correspond to what we call the Arba Lashonos Shel Geula, the four expressions, four stages of Geula in the beginning of Parshas Va'era. Votzesi, Vitzalti, Vigaalti, Velakachti, and that's that. Well, says the Raivad, if you look in the Pasuk, you will see that there is a fifth expression there, a fifth stage, which is Veheivesi Eschem El Haaretz, to bring us to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore there are actually a total of five. So one shouldn't be shocked by the notion that there could be five cups. If you know where the fourth comes from, you'll know where the fifth comes from. Also, it's Keneged Veheivesi. Now, with reference to the Baal Hamor's question, but doesn't the Mishnah tell us that there are only four? Doesn't that mean that Rabbi Tarfon's opinion of five pits him against the Mishnah and therefore sidelines him from the halacha? Says the Raivad, well, if you look carefully at the Mishnah, you will see that Rabbi Tarfon is not in conflict with the Mishnah, because the Mishnah doesn't say that there are four cups. The Mishnah says, lo yifchasu lo me arba kosos. One should have no less than four cups. And what that means is the critical minimum for Seder night is four cups. And perhaps someone who is sustained by tzedakah, they're only required to give him four cups and no less. However, there is certainly room for more, specifically the fifth cup, and Rabbi Tarfon himself, and this really seems to be the consensus. It's an interesting position. Rabbi Tarfon doesn't maintain that the fifth cup is a chova, it's an obligation. Rather, it's there as an option, it's a reshus. However, says the Raivad, about this I would say, kol hamarbe hareze meshubach. If a person wishes to have a fifth cup, all the better. And this position is echoed by the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, in his comments on the Rif, where again he notes that the four cups are the basic obligation, the fifth cup is reshus, and perhaps even more than reshus, perhaps mitzvah min hamuv, the ideal way to perform the mitzvah. And this, of course, is reminiscent of our discussion last week, the word reshus. What would reshus mean? Absolutely optional. Is there value in doing it? Does one nonetheless fulfill a mitzvah? According to the Ravad and the Ran, indeed one does. And moreover, the Rambam, well, reshus meaning with sanction and as a positive value. The Rambam in Hilchos Chametz Matzah in Perek Ches Halacha Yud also speaks somewhat, certainly gives license to have this fifth cup. He stresses that it's not a chova like the first four, but certainly he gives a entry to the fifth cup as a possibility into the halacha. So what we see so far, if we could take an interim synopsis, is that we have a statement of Rebbe Tarfon. There are two readings of the statement, and they really seem to be looking at an Ashkenazi-Sephardi divide, in the sense that Rashi and the Rashbam, and these are the French Rishonim representing Ashkenaz, they understand that all of this is the fourth cup, there's no more than four, whereas the Rif, Rabbeinu Yitzhak Alfasi, and the Rambam, and Rabbeinu Nissim, and others see that in fact there is room for the fifth. We should mention that there is one Ashkenazi Rishon of note who also refers to the fifth cup, and that is Rabbeinu Yosef Tuv Elem. Now, Rabbeinu Yosef Tuv Elem, he actually is quite famous in Pesach. And the reason why, he's one of the Baalei HaTosfos, but he kind of comes into his own around about Pesach time. And the reason is, because leading up to Pesach, you have the Arba Parshios, Shkolim and Zohar and Parah and Nachodesh, and then you have Shabbos HaGodol. Now, these Shabbosos, in classical terms, are accompanied by Piyutim. They're accompanied by certain additions to the Tefillah that are inserted in Shachris, whether it's in the Berachah Yotzeor, special Musaf, they're at the back of a Siddur. Unfortunately, well, for some, this is an absolute tragedy, many of these, what's called Yotzros, and they remain in the back of the Siddur. I guess people are in a hurry, and for whatever reason, they seem to have been phased out. But in the original Ashkenazi Masorah, certainly, we have these piyutim. And the classic piyut for Shabbos HaGadol was written by Rabbi Yosef Tuv Elem. And it's called Elokei HaRuchos. And it is basically a sweeping survey of every halacha of Pesach, Korban Pesach, Seder night, checking for chametz, the whole thing in alphabetical order, kedarkom shel piyutim, and it's really quite something. So that's there, Elokei HaRuchos. In fact, whereas most people, I would say, don't say this piyut Elokei HaRuchos, everyone says some of it. They just don't realize. And I'm referring to what we say at the beginning of Nirtza. For we say, Chasal Sidur Pesach Kil Choso, that short paragraph we've just finished to explain the halachos of Pesach, Kasha Zochinu L'Sadur Oso, Kein Nizkeh La'Asoso. Everyone says that. That's in the Haggadah. What's not to say? Where does that paragraph come from? That is actually the concluding paragraph of the piyut of Elokei HaRuchos. And we, for whatever reason, don't say Elokei HaRuchos. We just cut to the chase, I guess they would say. Or in English, they call it goal hanging, where we just get right to the very end, and we say that we've just gone through all of the halachos of Pesach. We adapt it, really, because we've been through the Seder, but we haven't really been through the piyut Elokei HaRuchos. In any case, so this piyut is quoted frequently in the comments of Tosfos and Arvei Psachim, because he's one of the Baalei HaTosfos. It's not just a piyut. There are halachic ramifications for everything he says, and therefore it's put under the mill on many different occasions. And Rabbeinu Yosef Tuv Elem in Elokei HaRuchos says, interestingly, that a person can have the fifth cup if he's thirsty. That's an interesting halachic designation. Thirsty. If he is, then he should say Halal HaGadol on the fifth cup. And Tosfos are very unhappy with this. Where do you get a fifth cup from? And then the whole discussion happens again. What's interesting is, Acharei HaDvarim HaEila, having seen all of the earlier sources, the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, makes no mention of the fifth cup. There's only four as far as the Shulchan Aruch is concerned, which is interesting because that means that he's not giving entry not to the Rif, not to the Rambam, and not to any of the other Sephardi Rishonim. He seems to be throwing his lot in more with Rashi and the Rashbam and others. Ironically, the only one who mentions it is the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, because Rabbi Yosef Tuv Elem mentioned it, and he's Ashkenazi, I mean, he's from one of the Baalei HaTosfos, and so the Ramah brings this interesting formulation where if a person's very thirsty, then he can have the fifth cup. Halachically, it's almost impossible for this to happen, because he can only say the fifth cup if he says Halal HaGadol. except if he's already said Halal Gadol, he can't say it twice. So he has to know in advance that he'll be thirsty enough after finishing Halal to leave it and then say it over a fifth cup. So essentially we're dealing with someone who is A, very thirsty, and B, very organized. If you can have both of those, then you have the fifth cup of Rabbi Yosef Tuv Elam, which means that Lamaisa, no one drinks the fifth cup. Ad Kan, the Kos HaChamishi. However, later on, that is to say, beginning with the later Rishonim, in the time of the Maharil and others, we find reference to another type of fifth cup, what we know as Koshel Eliyahu. Now, Koshel Eliyahu is not mentioned in the Gemara or Rishonim. It's not in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's mentioned in the beginning with later Rishonim, and then it becomes part of the Masorah. And it seems quite clear that our Koshel Eliyahu is an adaptation of the fifth cup. We're not going to drink it, and we're not going to split up Halal and Halal Gadol, but there is some nod to the fifth cup that takes the form of Koshel Eliyahu. Indeed, the simple reason why it's called Koshel Eliyahu is because it's about Vehevesi, it's about the future Geula for which Eliyahu Hanavi will come, be Vasilanu, Beseros Tov. So it's referred to as the Koshel Eliyahu. Essentially, it is the fifth cup. We pour it, and that's that. Indeed, just to see how the connection between Koshel Eliyahu and the fifth cup is expressed, it is said in the name of the Vilna Gaon that there's another reason why it's called Koshel Eliyahu. Why is it Eliyahu's cup? Because, says the Gaon, there exists a major machlokus between the Rishonim as to whether there should be a fifth cup. So what do? So we don't drink it because you're not sure, but we pour it because just in case. And therefore this cup is, in a sense, it represents us in flux. And whenever we're in flux, we remain unresolved, so we always look towards Eliyahu HaNavi. The Gemara says teku. Now the simple meaning of the word teku is tekum, let it stand. Or some say teku is from the expression tik, which means put it in the files until further notice. Some Mefarshim say that. But the classic remez of teku is Rosh HaTevus. Tishbi yitaretz kushios ve'ivoyos. Eliyahu HaNavi, he will come and answer all unresolved questions. And therefore, we call it Koshel Eliyahu because we pour a kos and we wait for Eliyahu HaNavi to come and tell us if we should actually be drinking it or not. That's what it says in the name of the Vilna Gaon. Now, what's interesting is, Benkach o Benkach, however you understand why it's called Koshel Eliyahu, if indeed it does relate to the fifth cup, it's worthwhile noting when we pour the Koshel Eliyahu. Because the mainstream minhag is to pour the Koshel Eliyahu pretty much after Shvoch HaMoscha, before we begin Halal. And that's very interesting because we pour the fifth cup essentially around the same time as we pour the fourth cup. But if it's meant to correspond to the original fifth cup over which Halal HaGadol was said, then we seem to be pouring it a little bit too early, because it's there actually while we're saying Halal as well alongside the fourth cup. That's a little bit of a of a curiosity. I will mention that I saw in the Tshuvas of Rav Sternbuch a rather radical suggestion, which he himself does, and that is that he does not pour Koshel Eliyahu after Shvoch HaMoscha. He waits until Kilo L'Mchasto. He waits till after Halal, till those 26 psukim. That's Halal HaGadol. That's what it's there for. He says, Rav Sternbuch, that's what I do. He recommends others doing it. I've never seen anyone else do this, and I wouldn't be surprised if no one else does. But nonetheless, that's Rav Sternbuch. The final, just an interesting, again, Lemaisa question is, what happens to the Koshel Eliyahu? It's poured, and then what? We don't drink it. So there are three customs, I would say. The mainstream custom is essentially after the Seder to pour it back into the bottle of wine, and that's okay. I know young children like to stay up and see if Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come and take a sip. They stand there watching. By the time they're finished, some of it, I think, has evaporated, or they've evaporated. But essentially it's poured back into the bottle. The Chasam Sofer had an interesting minhag. He would leave the Koshel Eliyahu covered and use it for Kiddush on Yom Tov morning, because in fulfillment of the adage of the Gemara, that once one mitzvah has been performed with something, so and it should be used for another mitzvah as well. So this cup has been used for kosher Eliyahu, should also be used for kosher Kiddush. And that also finds expression, by the way, in Erev Pesach, when people burn their chametz. So part of what adds fuel to the fire are all their sukkahs things. The lulav, some people keep the lulav and the hoshanos, etc., to use them, since they've been used for one mitzvah, let them use for another mitzvah as well. A final minhag, which is not so well known, which is the minhag in Karlin, is that they actually pour the kosher Eliyahu, and then from the kosher Eliyahu, they begin to pour the four cups, the cup number four for everyone at the Seder, which is also a very nice minhag. Those are the three with regards to kosher Eliyahu. So as said, what begins as a halachic discussion, lemaise, is more, ends up being more a discussion of minhag generated and inspired by that by the non-fulfillment of the halachic discussion there. So these are some comments with regards to the Kosach HaMishis, and from there we turn our attention to the Haggadah itself. I came across a very interesting observation or explanation in the Haggadah of Reb Leib Mintzberg, recently acquired, with regards to Baruch HaMakom. That's something that we, at a certain point near the beginning of Magid, we get to that point, Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shanat and Terla Amisra, Baruch Hu, we have those four Baruchs. And we look upon them as four, and many commentators relate to them as a set of four, again, another one of those fours. But what's the role of these Baruchs? Well, the truth is, says of Mintzberg, the full appreciation of these Baruchs will need to take into account that there are more than four Baruchs. There are actually six. We just don't normally associate them with each other. Because in the beginning, we say, Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenasan Ter L'Am Yisrael, Baruch Hu. But there is actually a very similar sounding set of Baruchs just a little bit later on in Magid, where we say, Baruch Shomer Haftachosu Li Yisrael, Baruch Hu, blessed is one who kept his promise to Yisrael, Baruch Hu. And that's two really similar sounding to these. It's part of the same idea. And what is the idea? Well, says Reb Mintzberg, we should remind ourselves that there is a major discussion in the Gemara between Rav and Shmuel as to what we mean when we say Maschilim Bignus U'Mesayim B'Shevach. We begin with the negative and end with the positive. What is the negative? What is the positive? So here we have this classic machlokus, Rabbi Shmuel. Shmuel is the more intuitive answer, we might say, that the negative is Avodim Ayinu Lepar B'Mitzrayim, but we're slaves in Egypt. And the positive is Vayotzeinu Hashem Elokeinu Misha. But Rav says, no, the negative and positive are not about being slaves in Mitzrayim. Something else entirely. The negative is, says Rav, Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu. It's our negative spiritual origins. And then the positive is, V'achshav Kervanu HaMakom LaAvodaso. So essentially it seems the focus, or the machlokus between Rav and Shmuel, is what is the focus of Seder night? Is the focus our experiences in Mitzrayim, Avodim and Ve'otzeinu? Or is perhaps it broader, that it's about the spiritual aspect, originally Ovdei Avodah Zarah, subsequently Kervanu HaMakom LaAvodaso, which one could say is really the pnimius of Golos Mitzrayim and Yetzias Mitzrayim. What's it all about? What's it for? Where is it coming from and where is it leading to? It's broader and deeper, Rav's approach, and according to Shmuel, that's not really the focus of the evening. Well, we say both, because they're both in Magid. We say Mitzchila of Avodah Zarah, but we also, of course, talk about the physical aspect of things. Aramia Vedavi, Vayered Mitzrayma, that's very overtly about the being persecuted and slaves, Hashem took us out. And once we have the background of these two streams, these two tracks within Magid, the physical and the spiritual, so let's come back to our Baruchs. You see, these Baruchs really are the openers for the various sections of Magid. Of course, there's no actual bracha on Maggid, and many Mefarshim wonder why. It is a mitzvah of Taryag, and therefore conspicuously absent is the very simple formula, so we don't have a formal or classic bracha in that sense. But nonetheless, we do open with Baruch, and therefore the way Mintzberg sees it is as follows. Actually, the opening words, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, they are a general introduction to Maggid. And then there are two specific brachas for the two elements of Maggid, the spiritual and the physical, Rav and Shmuel. And we begin with Rav, as we do in the Haggadah. And therefore, the first, shall we say, specific bracha is Baruch Shenosan Torah La'amu Yisrael, Baruch Hu, we thank Hashem for giving us the Torah, because that's V'achshav Kervonu HaMokom La'avodaso, and that introduces the spiritual side of the story. And that's why it is followed, number one, immediately by the four sons. And the four sons is really a discussion of how the Torah relates to the different types of sons, different approaches, different responses, which is part of Baruch Shenosan Torah La'amu Yisrael, that's appreciating the Torah. And from there we move to the paragraph, Rav's paragraph, we could say, Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayo Avoseinu. So this first of the two specific brachas, Baruch Shenosan Torah, introduces Rav's part of Maggid, the four sons, and Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And at that point, we move over to the second, which will then form the rest of Maggid, and we introduce it with the words, Baruch Shomer Haftachos El Yisrael, Baruch Hu, which is the Haftach, of course, to take us out of Mitzrayim. And at that point on, we focus on Avadim Hayinu, Vayotzi'enu, which is Shmuel's approach. So it's a very wonderful and elegant comment here, because essentially these Baruchs, they're markers, and it opens up and sheds light on the makeup and the structure of Maggid in that way. I would introduce first generally, and then each of the two approaches and the two emphases are then introduced specifically. So from there, I'd like to move to something that we say towards the end of Maggid. Things are moving steadily normally by that stage. People do not stop to discourse so much. But that's our discussion of the mitzvah of matzah. Matzah zoshanu ochlim al shumma. One of Rabbi Gamliel's three items about which he says, if one did not expound upon these things and present their reasons, lo yotzei lechavosu, he has not fulfilled his chiyuv, certainly not in the ideal sense of the word. So there's a great deal to say about the matzah. Just before we begin, I must mention my cousin, actually, last year at his Seder. So he asked his children about matzah, just wanted to get them into things. So he asked why there's so many holes in the matzah. And why his young daughter answered, Ki anachnu b'nei chorin. So matzah is b'nei chorin, as we know. And so it's one of the pillars of, you know, of Pesach, of course. And we ask, you know, why do we eat matzah al shumma? And it's because we went out so quickly, and we quote the pasuk, and we were in such a hurry, and the dough was not able to rise, and the result was matzah. Which means that the element or the aspect that we're focusing on here is that we left quickly. That's now very important for us. And apparently, it's so important that the food that resulted in coming out quickly, namely matzah, becomes a mitzvah from the Torah to be eaten every year. So that means that this idea apparently is very important, so important that it's embedded in the mitzvah of matzah every year. And moreover, as we mentioned, discussed at length last week, the entire festival is called Chag HaMatzos. So the whole Yom Tov is taken over, all 7 days, in one form or another, by this food that represents coming out quickly. And certainly there is room to ask why. Especially the way that we have phrased it and referred to it. Pesach is about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Many, many things happen when we left Mitzrayim. There's many aspects and many details. One of those details is that when we came out quickly. Somehow, that detail, which seems to be perhaps no more than a footnote in the Exodus experience, becomes central, and it becomes a mitzvah, and it becomes the chag. And how did that happen? It could be that the average person, when he would describe Yetzias Mitzrayim, he could be forgiven for leaving that detail out, even if he discussed at length. But the Torah does not allow us to leave it out. And moreover, not only does it become the mitzvah of matzah, it's also reflected in the very severe prohibition of chametz, which has many different isurim related to it. And the Chachamim took their cue from the Torah, and even b'mashehu, and every last crumb has got to go, and the penalty for eating chametz is very severe, and that's why getting the house ready for Pesach, it's a process. And all of this to avoid the opposite matzah. So certainly, it's really the same question, the other side of the coin, why eating chametz is so severe. And as we know, if there's ever a time in the year where it's acceptable or understandable to go a little bit overboard, certainly when it comes to getting ready in terms of getting rid of chametz. But why? Another interesting shaila is, here we are saying, the Haggadah says, that should you ask, why do we eat matzah? The answer is, well, you know, when we left Mitzrayim, it was so quick, and that's where matzah comes from. There's just one problem. Eating matzah was a mitzvah that we had been commanded before we even left. On the night before Yetzias Mitzrayim, there was already a mitzvah of Be'erev Tov L'Matzahs, a matzah semerim yochalu. So it's very difficult to commemorate something before it's happened. That's somewhat backwards. Now, one could say, in a sense, Balabatish, and certain Meforshim do, that this is an example of what's called Al Shem Ha'asid. As if to say, the Torah knows full well that we will come out in a hurry, and therefore already is commanding us with an eye on that future event, to eat matzah. So it's almost like it's a preemptive commemoration, which is quite rare. Okay. But the Maharal says something else. The Maharal in Sefer Gevuras Hashem says that what is embedded here within this idea of matzah and leaving in a hurry is foundational, not only for understanding Pesach, but for understanding Judaism. And he prefaces by saying, and this is important for a fuller and more meaningful discussion of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim should not be relegated to a negative experience, a negative exodus. And by negative, we mean that we define it only by where we left, where we weren't, where we went out from, without ever really considering where we went to. We went out from Mitzrayim, but from where? Whenever one travels, one goes from A to B. When we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, the focus is on the A that we left. But where is the B that we went to? Where or what were we going to? Well, Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just about what we're not, that we're no longer slaves to Paro, but it's what we then become, namely Avdei Hashem. The beginning of Hallel starts, Hallelu, Avdei Hashem, Avodai Heim, Asher Otzeisi Asa Me'eretz Mitzrayim. That means that the full understanding of Yetzias Mitzrayim is, as we say, not only that we left Mitzrayim, but where did we go to? What did that take us towards? It took us towards being Hashem's people. And this indeed is the meaning behind what we say in the Haggadah on the words Vayotzienu Hashem Mitzrayim. So the Haggadah famously says, Lo Ayde Malach, Lo Ayde Saraf, Lo Ayde Shaliach. This was not done through any intermediary, Ella HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bechvodo Uva'atzmo. And it was done directly by Hashem, whatever that means. And here again, what's the significance of whether we were taken out of Mitzrayim through a shaliach. Apparently, other things could be done through a shaliach, but not this. Not Yetzias Mitzrayim. Well, why not? I mean, ultimately, it comes from Hashem. Except, says Maharal, the moment of Yetzias Mitzrayim, or the experience of leaving Mitzrayim, means we left Mitzrayim to become connected to Hashem, to become Hashem's people. And therefore, in the interest of that connection being developed and promoted and established in as firm and direct a way as possible, so the event that brought that about was also done directly. When it comes to becoming Hashem's people, becoming connected with Him, so then we're not, that event will not happen in a disconnected way, in an indirect way, through some emissary or through some other agency. So when we say, Ella HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo v'atzmo, when Hashem takes us to be His people, He does so, so to speak, personally. That's the significance of lo ayde malach, v'lo ayde shaliach. And it's important and very worthwhile to mention, just for a moment, the role of makas b'choros in this process. It's interesting, actually, that the proof text that we bring, and we always say k'moshe ne'emar, we say something and then we back it up from somewhere. When we say that Hashem took us out directly, not through a shaliach, we quote a pasuk that deals with makas b'choros, not with leaving Mitzrayim. We say shene'emar v'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh, anivun o'malach. V'ikesi kol b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim, it's about smiting the firstborn, anivun o'ashaliach. V'chol alei Mitzrayim eseh shvatim, anivun o'acher, anihu, ani Hashem, anivun o'acher. So it's interesting because we state that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim directly, but then we quote a pasuk where He smote the firstborn directly. But that's something else. Until we understand that it's not something else. Makas b'choros is inherently bound up with Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's fascinating to consider it, because as one of the plagues, it's number 10. To all intents and purposes, similar to numbers 1 through 9. But at a certain level, Makas b'choros comes into its own. It's more than just, quote-unquote, another plague, and even just the final plague. It's actually the turning point of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the reason why, interestingly, is that this is the only Makkah that's a response to threatening the special status of the Jewish people. All of the other makos were responses to persecuting the Jewish people, which was terrible, but it's measure for measure. It's punishment, retribution for a crime. Makas b'choros, the pasuk itself says at the very beginning, it's mentioned explicitly in the pasuk, Hashem says to Paro, B'ni b'chori Yisrael. Yisrael are my b'chor. What that means is, amongst all of Hashem's other children, Yisrael are the b'chor. They're unique. They're special. They have a special status, and you have violated that, and therefore, Hinei Anochi Hareg Espincha Bechorecha. Makas Bechoros is not a response to an aspect of persecution, but the totality of the subjugation of the Jewish people, repressing and oppressing Bechor, Bini Bechor Yisrael. The comeuppance for that was Makas Bechoros. And therefore, when we state that Hashem took us out directly, not through a shaliach, the pasuk that we quote is Makas b'choros. Makas b'choros is the beginning of establishing the unique status of the Jewish people. That's what Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about, and that's why it was done directly by Hashem. And it's interesting, in many contexts we see Makas b'choros, it's an entity unto itself. Even, to go back just for a moment, to Dayenu, which we discussed at length last week, we refer to all of the plagues, ilu asahim bem shifatim, justice, and there's a separate reference, separate mentioning to Makas b'choros, ilu haragas b'choreim. It's not part of asahim shifatim. It's a new thing. It's number 10, but it's also the beginning of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And it's for that reason that there are a number of places where, of all the plagues, we only mention Yetzias Mitzrayim. We just start at number 10. For example, in the brachas every morning after Kriyat Shema, Mitzrayim Ga'altanu, Hashem redeem us in Mitzrayim, Kol B'chorehim Harata, U'V'chorcha Ga'alta. Makas B'chor, we start at number 10. There's no dam, no tzvardeya, I mean, it's just makas b'choros, because that's within the context of Yitzias Mitzrayim. And similarly, in the evening, hamakeh be'evroso kol b'chorei Mitzrayim, and then vayotzeis ama Yisrael. We also make specific reference to makas b'choros, and actually we take our cue from David HaMelech in Tehillim, in Halal HaGadol, back to the 26 Kila Olam Chastos, because there we begin with Makas Bechoros, Lemake Mitzrayim Bivchoreim, Kila Olam Chasto, Vayotze Samu Yisom Mitochom, Kila Olam Chasto. So in many, many different contexts and locations, we see that Makas Bechoros is really an entity unto itself for reasons that we said. That's also part of Aniv Lo Malach. In any event, coming back to leaving in a hurry, how does that feature with this whole discussion? So Maharal says, classic Maharal, absolutely fascinating. Because Yitzias Mitzrayim, leaving Mitzrayim, is about connecting us with Hashem, and Hashem does it, again, so to speak, personally, He also does it, the Yitzias Mitzrayim happened in a godly way. Which brings us to the question of time. Time is something that Hashem is not bound by and ultimately does not exist within. And therefore, there is no duration or even past, present, and future ultimately. Now, that's something which is almost impossible for us to relate to within time. But that's why we find that often as the interface between Hashem and us, things happen, at least initially, without time. Aseres Hadibros, the Ten Commandments, which was our great direct encounter with Hashem, Rashi tells us, originally, they were all said at once. There is no sequence. There is no first, second, and third. There's no before and after. It's all at once, which of course we could not relate to, and then they were subsequently broken down for us from Numbers 1 to 10. And therefore, the idea of leaving quickly, that is to say, not allowing time to be a factor, that there should be no aspect of duration. Of course, we can't escape time. But in the same way that when things happen in a very rushed or swift manner, we would say, colloquially, they happen in no time at all. And that was the level and the effect that being achieved by leaving so quickly. It's a statement of Hashem connecting us to Him and therefore interacting with us in a godly way in order to bestow upon us that unique status as Hashem's people. And it's for this reason that matzah is so central to Pesach. It's not just commemorating a detail of leaving. Leaving quickly was a defining characteristic, not only of leaving Mitzrayim, it's a defining characteristic of the status of the Jewish people as they left Mitzrayim. And Pesach, of course, is the bris that we have together with Hashem, the Korban Pesach, it's like Mila, and that's what we establish our connection. And that's why the Torah is so insistent to preserve in the form of mitzvos and severe prohibitions, matzah and not chametz. Ultimately, it's a statement about the unique nature of the Jewish people. That's something a person cannot afford to be making the wrong statement about. And interestingly, as we come to discuss matzah now, so not only do we leave in a hurry, but matzah, of course, by definition, is baked in a hurry, quickly. You can't wait. If you wait, it will become chometz. In a sense, what Yitzias Mitzrayim was for us as an experience, matzah represents as an entity. And of course, the two came together. How appropriate that they did. Matzah, in a sense, is timeless food. One could almost say that chometz minus time equals matzah. It represents something that time has not been allowed to happen to. And that's why it then carries the message of our special connection with Hashem. That being the case, says Maharal, we no longer have a problem with the fact that on the one hand, we say that we eat matzah because we left so quickly, and therefore we bake matzahs, with the fact that on the other hand, we were told to eat matzah beforehand, because they are connected not so much as matzah or leaving quickly leading to matzah, but the underlying principle leads to both of them. That's the point. In other words, the underlying principle of transcendency, ultimately, and timelessness, it is to food matzah and to leaving quickly. And therefore, as part of the transcendent and timeless experience, we actually already were eating matzah before we left Mitzrayim, because the same idea is behind both of them. So it's interesting. We say that we commemorate leaving Mitzrayim, but only in a loose sense. The two came together because there's the same idea behind both of them. So of course they'll come together, but they can also exist separately. And moreover, says Maharal, a fascinating suggestion. It could be that not only eating matzah before we left in a hurry is appropriate, it could be that it was also necessary. It could be that we needed a session of ingesting this concept through the form of matzah in order to allow us to be eligible to leave quickly in the way that we did when we did. So not only now is matzah similar to leaving quickly, not only is it not a pure commemoration, it could actually be a precipitation of leaving quickly. We need to format ourselves to be timelessness friendly through eating matzah, and then we're able to leave. And therefore, when we ate matzah on Seder night before we left Mitzrayim, we could certainly refer to that as a case of history in the making. For we are preparing ourselves for the history that will come, or perhaps uniquely here, history in the baking. So, this, I believe, it takes the whole concept of chametz and matzah, of halachically, of course, we're well aware of them, and any, you know, Jewish housewife, no one can get in her way when it comes to getting rid of a chametz, including the Shulchan Aruch sometimes. But to get a sense of what's behind it, because it's such a foundational idea. And moreover, let's not forget, the Torah calls the festival Chag HaMatzos. Matzah commemorates and is associated with this timelessness, which is about our connection with Hashem. That only relates to the spiritual element of Yetzias Mitzrayim. In terms of political or physical, which is also important, leaving Mitzrayim, it doesn't matter whether we left quickly or slowly. Slowly is also fine. It's not relevant to that. And therefore, the Perush on the Haggadah, Medrash Haggadah, known as the Malbim Haggadah, says that it tells us a lot that the Torah gives the name to the Chag, Chag HaMatzos, because it's laying thereby primacy on the spiritual result of Yetzias Mitzrayim that's expressed by the matzah, because the physical development didn't really relate to matzah at all. So if the Torah calls it Chag HaMatzos, it's a way of reminding us what leaving Mitzrayim was all about, what it was for. So that, I believe, is a fascinating discussion, and especially as we, when it comes to eating matzah, of course, our attention tends to be more halachic, which it certainly should be, when it comes to motzi matzah, how big is a kezias, and how long is a gedeh chilas pras, very important questions. But perhaps also, while we're within that gedeh chilas pras, to have a thought for what matzah represents, that could also add a great deal of meaning to this very special mitzvah of Be'erev Toch L'Matzos. Now, let's conclude actually by moving forwards in the Seder to Hallel, to the second part of Hallel. And of course we began Hallel at the end of Maggid, and then we finish Hallel in Hallel. Why do we finish Hallel? What are we doing? Well, the simple answer is either because it's Yom Tov, or because we started, and it's just a very natural thing. However, the Vilna Gaon gives a fundamental vision with regards to what this Hallel is. And we perhaps preface by reminding ourselves. We look upon Yetzias Mitzrayim not just, quote-unquote, as a historical event, and also not just as a foundational event for us, but rather we look upon it as the root event for us, in the sense that when we left Mitzrayim, one could almost call it the Maase Avos for all other redemptions from subsequent exiles. Being able to leave Mitzrayim meant that we are now vouchsafed with the possibility and the capacity to leave subsequent Golios in the right time. It contains within it that potential energy. And therefore, says the Vilna Gaon, the two halves of Hallel on Seder night are facing in different directions. The Hallel, the first two chapters of Hallel, we could say face backwards, because they are devoted to Yetzias Mitzrayim, the original Yetzias Mitzrayim. But then the rest of Hallel, says the Gaon, is a song in anticipation of the future Geula, which is an emanation of Pesach. It faces forwards. So it's really fascinating, because as the Seder progresses, it unfolds. In the sense that compacted within Yetzias Mitzrayim are all Geulos. So as we're between Geulos, so we focus on Yetzias Mitzrayim initially for itself, and ultimately for its emanations, and for its latent applications. This actually dovetails very beautifully with a comment of the Sfas-Emes. We have at a certain point the part of the Seder called Tzofen. And Tzofen we call the Afikoman. And what is the Afikoman? Well, we know what it is. It's Zecher for Korban Pesach. But Tzofen tells us that earlier in the Seder, we took a matzah and split it in half. And some of it was hidden away, depending by whom, hopefully to resurface at some stage. But the idea is that it's hidden away, and then it comes back. And Sfas-Emes says, that's exactly what Yetzias Mitzrayim is like. In other words, the full energy, the full capacity of Yetzias Mitzrayim was not consumed, so to speak, all at the early stage of leaving Mitzrayim itself. In the sense, there was a piece of Yetzias Mitzrayim that was broken off and is hidden, and it has not yet expressed itself. And it comes back, just like that other part of the matzah comes back. Comes back at the appropriate time, representing the culmination of all the emanations of Yetzias Mitzrayim in the final Geula. So it's a very interesting perspective on the Afikoman itself. It's the same entity, but part of it's broken off and will feature later on. For us, later on in the Seder, and ultimately later on in history. And I would like, in this light, perhaps to come back just to reflect upon the fifth cup that we began with, the Kosach HaMishi. And it's somewhat unusual to know, even if it exists, even if it's there, according to all opinions, it's not like the other four of Chova, and this one's Rishus. What is the meaning behind a cup being Rishus? Well, As we mentioned from the Raivad, this cup corresponds to Vehivesi. From a certain point of view, Vehivesi, the Geula, it's Rishus. Rishus in the sense that the first four have already happened. I mean, they are established historical facts for us. And then the future Geula has not yet happened. So from a certain point of view, what is it waiting for? What's waiting for us? So it's up to us. As surely as the Geula itself is Rishus in the sense that it's not optional in that way, but it's Rishus in the sense that it's down to us. So that's reflected in this fifth cup, where it's Rishus. It's up to you. Because Behevesi is up to you. And I believe perhaps this can give us some further sense of attachment to this position of Rabbi Yosef Tuv Elim, where he says that the Kos Chamishi, who is it for? It's for someone who's thirsty. And in the sense that the Hevesi is like that. It's for those who are thirsty. If the Jewish people are thirsty enough, they'll get to the Hevesi. They'll get to the fifth cup. And if they don't, until further notice. So this most unusual situation where if you're thirsty, so proceed. Because that's how the Jewish people proceed when they're thirsty. And so we see that the Seder night, it's beginning with the Gon, Hallel facing backwards and forwards, and the Sfasemes with Afikoman, the Matzah, some earlier, some later. And this is the way forward for the Jewish people. The way forward for the Jewish people begins by facing backwards. Because if we don't face backwards and we don't know where we're coming from, we have very little idea of where we're meant to be heading towards. And this is the source of a great deal of confusion and disillusionment, even in our time. There's a fascinating medrash in Parshas Yetzeh with regards to Yaakov. Yaakov says, V'haya Hashem li l'Elokim. And the medrash says that the word V'haya is the word that represents Ge'ula. Ge'ula will begin with V'haya, V'haya b'yomahu, hinei Elokeinu zeh kivinu lo. Rav Zevin, that's all, in the Sefer LaTorah V'lamoadim, raises the question, V'haya doesn't sound like such a descriptive word, it just means it will be. I mean, many things could be. How does this emblematic, how is it the characteristic of, or essentially connected to the Ge'ula, V'haya? It's a rather nondescript word. Except, says Rav Zevin, very wonderfully, the word V'haya is very interesting. Because it connotes the future, but it begins in the past. V'haya is really the word Haya, and something's happened to it to turn it into the future. The Vavahibuch, what's called. There's an and, which then changes it. So the word Haya is it was. V'haya means it will be. And that's really the secret of Geulas Yisrael. As we look towards the future, it begins by looking back to the past. Not dwelling on the past and not staying in the past, but certainly drawing off the past and gaining direction from there in order to know how to chart the course for the future. So these are some thoughts for the Seder, which I personally found to be most meaningful. And we'll leave it over there for this evening. We'll meet again, Mirtz Hashem, in 2 weeks' time. And in the meanwhile, wish you all Chag HaShem Sameach.